Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
It is Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bick Nizar, and with me is the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. What is going on, Batch?
Not a whole lot. How are you today, Bick?
Man, I am psyched. Thursdays, you know, where we had a bit of a day off yesterday, so we didn't really get to conclude the submissions for Game of Takes, but we unveil Game of Takes thanks to all the submissions we got on Monday, Tuesday, all the people that reached out to us and wanted to get involved. So round two goes today. I'm very excited to see if our competitor can knock off Chris Keene this week.
Yes, and our competitor, I guess, the challenger, is Bailey Broadband, at Bailey Broadcast on Twitter. He's one of the co-hosts of the Area 51 Hockey Podcast. And so we'll hear Bailey going up against Chris Keene, our defending champion from last week, who won the poll in arguing Jim Benning and his tenure with the Vancouver Canucks. So we'll hear from Chris and we'll hear from Bailey in just a few minutes, and then we'll put the votes out to you on Twitter to decide who will be on the throne at the end of the week. Will Chris win for 2 weeks in a row, or is Bailey going to dethrone him?
We'll also, we'll put that out on Twitter, at Sportsnet650. And then if you want to vote by text, we can take those as well, 650. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Also today, John LeClair going to be joining us, legendary NHLer, 16 years in the NHL, won a cup as well early on with his run in Montreal. Plus, one of the things that we said we're going to do is we're going to bring players on to try to learn player traits and you know what made these prototype players so great. And so we're going to talk to John about being a power forward, because I think when you think of that 90s era and just really the power forward in general, there's a handful of guys you think of, but John LeClair stands out to me as well as the prototypical power forward batch.
Yeah, and you know that line that he was on with Michael Renberg and Eric Lindros was a very powerful line, like Eric Lindros as well, you know, feels like a prototypical 90s power forward. So, you know, we can get into some of the minutiae of how those guys found a way to work together when, you know, there certainly were some similarities to their games. And, you know, just talk about, A, you know, when did John LeClair recognize that that was going to be his game? And, you know, B, what were some of the things he worked on to develop that area of his game whereby he was able to use his size and strength to help contribute offense? You know, a couple of 50-goal seasons, certainly had almost 100 points a couple of times, over the 90-point threshold three times in his career. So we'll get into all that with John LeClair coming up just after 12:30.
Plus, he's also coaching the new 3-on-3 league that's intends to start next year, 3ICE. A lot of great guys they've signed up to be as coaches. So we'll talk to him about that as well. That's all coming up. But we should get you up to date, though, on some of the latest news for today across the NHL. So Elliot Friedman reporting that they have the return to play format, and now they've confirmed the playoffs will not be bracketed, but reseeded every round. And this is the important bit. The qualifying, the play-ins are going to be best of five. So Canucks versus the Wild, best of five. We kind of assumed that, but now confirmed. And all the other rounds, Batch, are going to be best of sevens.
Yeah, I think both of these pieces of news are great for, you know, for the sanctity of the Stanley Cup, for lack of a better term. First of all, because you are going to have to win 4 7-game series as you normally would in order to win the cup. So that, you know, puts a dent in the argument that, you know, this, you know, shouldn't be considered like a normal Stanley Cup, or that the champion should have an asterisk next to it. You know, aside from all the exceptional circumstances, it's going to be the same 4 rounds, 7-game series. You know, you've got to win 16 games to win the Stanley Cup. And then of course, in the case of the play-in teams, potentially even more than that. So I like that. And then the reseeding is a good decision as well, whereby, you know, it's not just a bracketed format. You're going to continue to penalize teams who are ranked low going even into the play-in format, so that if we have a Chicago upset in Edmonton or a Montreal upset of Pittsburgh, they're still going to have to face the toughest matchup every step of the way throughout the playoffs in order to win the Stanley Cup. And I think that's something that was important. It seems like the players really felt it was important, and the league has agreed to go in that direction because, you know, as much as these teams are going to have a chance, they really shouldn't. You know, those two teams in particular should not have a good chance to win the Stanley Cup because of where they were sitting when the season was paused, because of the fact that they would not have made the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is kind of like a second life for them, a rebirth that they get a chance to continue to play games, but it should not be easy for them, or it should not be perceived in any way that they are getting any advantages that they shouldn't have. So I like that part of it. The only thing remaining that I don't like about this playoff format is the fact that the round robin games are going to carry the entire weight of the seeding for the top four teams in each conference. There should be a lot more weight placed on the regular season than just being placed as a tiebreaker format in those four games, in my opinion.
Anyway. Yeah, I totally get that. And it is the one thing that I kind of struggle with, but also at the same time, you have to have those games mean something, right? Because for those teams to treat their play-in round as exhibition games, that takes away the edge of, will they be ready for round one? And that's my concern, is if you make them meaningless and you say, okay, Boston, you probably were going to win the Eastern Conference, so you automatically get the one seed, or it's difficult for you to lose it. If they coast through it, then they lose in the first round because they're just not up to game speed yet. That's suddenly, you know, they're going to look back and say, well, we didn't get a chance to really get warmed up. You make those games matter for those eight teams, and hopefully they treat them as such, and then they can be ready for round one. I think it's a small price to pay for normalizing those games.
So see, here's what I would do instead then. You take the number one and the number two seed. They play each other in a best of three series for the number one seed. You take the number three and the number four seed, and they play each other in a best of three series for the number three seed, right? So those games still matter. You're still battling for seeding, but there isn't the possibility of the fourth seed moving up into the first seed just because they get hot or they're more prepared coming back and win three games in a row. Like that to me is where there's the issue, is a team like Boston, who was running away with the Eastern Conference, now could potentially be the fourth seed if they can't get off the mark quickly enough. And that's my biggest issue. But again, in terms of the overall scheme of things, it's a minor issue that I have with it. And more likely than not, the cream will rise to the top in those games anyway.
And what's happened now is, okay, because of the process that we've taken to get to here, right? The NHL has done all the right things to remove the question of, well, is this playoffs going to be an asterisk? Is the winner going to have an asterisk on the Stanley Cup? No, because like you're getting all the things you want. Best of seven for four rounds, 16 teams. You are getting all of that. So you shouldn't have complaints about how the NHL has set this up. Now, if the players come back and it resembles rec hockey or shinny hockey, whatever you want to talk about, and they are not up to par, then that conversation reemerges. But as far as the format and the structure to get to here, the NHL has laid it out correctly. You and I have alleviated the concerns of the players won't be ready to play because of the layoff of a longer training camp. You know, the first few games of the season, players are ready to go. So they should be ready to go come playoff time. So we're less concerned about that. But if that still comes to fruition, that's where we can have complaints. As far as what this looks like, it looks exactly as it always says. So you should have no complaints about that.
Yeah, and I mean, there are going to be people out there that are still going to want to put an asterisk next to this. And especially if, you know, let's say, for example, a team that's in a similar situation to the Canucks wins the Stanley Cup, where they had a bunch of injuries when the season was put on pause. They had a number of players, you know, Dougie Hamilton was a guy that was supposed to be done for the year. So what if the Carolina Hurricanes win the Stanley Cup? There will be people that will argue, well, there's no way they would have won it had it been a regular season because Dougie Hamilton wouldn't have been able to come back and play. So therefore, there's an asterisk next to it. Those people are going to be there and there's nothing you can do about it.
But they're wrong. Everyone got healthy.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is that this is the closest the NHL could have come to making this a regular season. Are those things going to play a major factor? We're going to have to wait and see. But I'm not really concerned in, you know, trying to litigate whether this counts as a Stanley Cup or not, because the record books are going to show that a team this year will be a Stanley Cup champion, and they will have had to win 16 playoff games, potentially more if one of the play-in teams wins the Stanley Cup, in order to win, which is the same as every other year. And beyond that, you know, for me, anything that you're going to argue about it not counting or not being the same is semantics, and it, you know, it doesn't really move the conversation forward.
And this is, you know, the whole return to play stuff. It's still contingent on getting clearance from governments, getting clearance from the hub cities, obviously, and getting clearance from health officials as we navigate COVID-19 and this pandemic. And we should mention the Penguins released a statement today that announced that one of their players did test positive for COVID-19 virus. That player is not in Pittsburgh. They've been in isolation since first experienced symptoms. They have since recovered and are feeling well. So, yes, they've recovered, but it's just a reminder, like, there's still some steps to overcome before we get to this time when we're actually playing games.
Oh, and, you know, with all likelihood, there will be players that test positive for COVID-19 as this process ramps up, right? Like, you're going to get all these guys back, especially when you get to the full training camps where you're going to have, you know, upwards of 30 players sharing the ice together in close quarters without masks. There's nothing you can do to limit that if you're going to get back to playing. The only way to limit spread like that is to not play the games at all. The NHL has made it clear that that is not an avenue they're going to go down. So it's going to happen, right? Like, you know, it would surprise me more if it doesn't happen than if it does. The way that the NHL is going to be judged, in my mind anyway, is how they deal with it, how quickly they're able to confirm a player has test positive, how quickly they're able to isolate that player, whether they're able to make sure that it doesn't spread throughout an individual team. Because as soon as that happens, then we are talking about a situation where the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the sanctity of the Stanley Cup playoffs are compromised if an entire team has to sit out 2 weeks because half of them have tested positive for COVID-19. So that is going to be the challenge. And that, to me, is going to be that line in the sand that decides whether these playoffs are going to be able to continue or not. But, you know, to sit here and think that a player in the NHL will not contract COVID-19 between now and the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs in October, that's not realistic. It's going to happen. It just, you know, it just has to be in a situation where the NHL can limit the spread.
It's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. We took your submissions. I'm excited for it. It's week two of Game of Takes. Let's get to it.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
A lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
All right, you know how this goes. You get to rally your realm. Big shout out to Chris Keene at Chris K Films, who took the throne in week one. So he sits atop the throne. Somebody has to come in and knock him off, dethrone him. This week's competitor, we gave you the topic of the future of the Canucks goaltending. Bailey Broadbent going to try to take down Chris Keene. Here's Bailey.
You can give credit to Mike Gillis for acquiring him, to Jim Benning for retaining him, to Ian Clark for molding him, or maybe Judd Brackett just because. But it doesn't matter. The fact is Jacob Markstrom is an elite goaltender and the Canucks need to do anything in their power to retain him. Markstrom's not exiting his prime. He's only entering it, and it's at the same time as the rest of the core. Goaltending is the most crucial position in playoff hockey, one where a single goalie can win you the cup or lose you a series, and having a top 10 goalie in Markstrom means he fits the bill. This team isn't good enough to handle a goalie that's dealing with growing pains next season. Whether it's a full ride of Demko or a tandem, this team was barely good enough without its star goaltender in the lineup. You think they can fare well without him? Whether it was Markstrom's record-setting game against the Blackhawks, his 43-save shutout against the Hurricanes, or 49 saves against LA, time and time again, Jacob Markstrom bailed the Canucks out when they least deserved it. It's not the time to take a risk. It's not the time to let Markstrom walk when the rest of your team is on the rise. How painful would it be for most of the team to click, but a lack of an experienced elite goaltender robbed the Canucks of their true potential? Now is the time to go all in on the player the Canucks needed last season, this season, and next season. The player that many thought wasn't just a good player, but the most valuable player. It might cost you a top prospect in a year to create the cap space, but it's a no-brainer. This team would have a bona fide elite player at every position. The decision is easy. Come on, Jimbo. Re-sign Markstrom.
Yeah, goosebumps with that G pick. That's awesome. Again, so that's Bailey Broadbent at Bailey Broadcast on Twitter. That's the competitor batch.
Yeah, that's a really strong contending argument there coming in from Bailey. So Chris is going to have his hands full this week. I'll be interested to see what he has as a retort for Bailey's argument that the Canucks need to sign Jacob Markstrom at all costs.
It's the future of the net in Vancouver, and they're going for the composite throne. Here's Chris Keene.
Jacob Markstrom has developed into one of the better goalies in the NHL, culminating in his team MVP-level performance this season, which put the Vancouver Canucks in contention for a playoff spot. Though the question on whether or not the Vancouver Canucks should re-sign Markstrom is contingent on what kind of contract he's looking for. It is important to consider that players are looking to get paid for what their past performance suggests they are worth, whereas teams should focus on giving out contracts based on the level of performance they feel that player will provide through the duration of their new deal. Over the past 20 years, there are only 7 starting goaltenders who have been in the 70th percentile of the league or higher in goals saved above expected per 60 minutes for a minimum of 3 consecutive seasons. This means that goalies are highly volatile and it is extremely rare for a goalie to maintain an elite level of play consistently. Furthermore, Jacob Markstrom is now 30 years old and is fast approaching the age where goalies tend to see a sharp decline in performance, as only a small handful of elite Hall of Fame level goalies have maintained their elite performance into their mid to late 30s. To that extent, if Jacob Markstrom is asking for a long-term contract, the best move for the Canucks would be to let him walk in free agency. Sergei Bobrovsky is a recent example of how quickly a goalie's play can go south, and the Canucks simply cannot afford yet another bad contract on their books. Alternatively, if Jacob Markstrom is willing to sign a shorter-term deal at 3 years or less with a similar cap hit as he has now, then it makes sense to bring him back as he brings a sense of stability to an organization that desperately needs it. And if his play does drop off, at least you are not committed to him long-term. In this scenario, Thatcher Demko should be shopped and traded if you can get a return that makes sense for the team, either a high draft pick or quality defensive prospect. If a team will not meet this price, it may make sense to go into next season with both goalies and make your final determination as to who to protect going into next year's expansion draft at that time. I do not think this scenario is very likely, however, as I expect Jacob Markstrom and his agent know the type of long-term contract he likely could get on the open market, so my final verdict, assuming Markstrom is seeking a long-term contract, it would be best for the Vancouver Canucks organization to hand over the reins to Thatcher Demko and pursue a veteran backup goalie in free agency.
The champion speaks his mind on the future of the Canucks net minding. And champion or conqueror? You know, yeah, I guess champion.
Champion, you know, you could call him the leader of the realm or yes. Whatever however we want.
Protector of realms.
Game of takes. You know, Chris needed to go more all in with his take. Like,
uh-oh.
I understand what he's saying, but I heard if a few too many times there, whether it was, you know, if Markstrom wants to sign long-term or if they can sign him short-term, if he drops off in a few years. You know, like, as much as, you know, he makes a lot of good points, and I agree with many things he said, like, pick a side, man. Like, that's the one thing you can say for Bailey. Even if you don't agree with him, he went all in on they need Markstrom, and he did not waver.
So you're saying the Empire's shaking, Batch?
I don't know. I think Bailey is a really strong contender this week. I think there is a chance that Chris gets knocked off. But again, it's not for us to decide. It's for you, the listener. And again, we're going to put this up momentarily on Twitter at Sportsnet650. You'll be able to listen to both Bailey and Chris make their cases again on Twitter. We'll have the audio up there, and then you can cast your vote to decide who is going to ascend to the throne and win Game of Takes for this week. And again, we talked about this last week, but Bailey and Chris, they can rally their social media followings. They can get their friends, their family.
You got to rally the banners, right?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to bring your bannermen together, and you've got to go to battle here. So, you know, who is able to outlast the other, who will be on the throne when we're back on the air tomorrow? It's either Bailey or it's Chris for a second straight week. Make your voice heard at Sportsnet650. Cast your vote.
Yeah, and I will say, like, Chris brought all the facts, right? And that's very important, just the volatility of the goaltending market. In general, though, for me, you know, taking aside those two great takes, I look at it and I say, I kind of apply the logic of how I've experienced some things in my own career. Like, I'm all for change. But you have to remember, if you are doing change, make sure you're doing it for an upgrade. I remember when I started my career, I worked at a place where, you know, I didn't necessarily have the best culture, but I loved doing the job. And I was like, yeah, I really am invested in having a good surrounding group of people around me. So I just left for the first opportunity I could take. And while I was happy to get out of that office, I didn't necessarily take a better job. And that was a lesson I try to take moving forward. It's, you know, when you take the new job, it's great to change, but you got to do it for an upgrade. And if you're changing for Thatcher Demko, is there a value upgrade in there? I know, I understand it's cheaper and it gives you more flexibility moving forward, but I'm not convinced the value is going to be enough to warrant changing off of Jacob Markstrom. Considering what, you know, the projected cost would be for Jacob Markstrom, I don't think it's going to be that Bobrovsky range or some of the other higher profile goalies that are going to be in the free agent market as well. If it's somewhere in that five range, especially considering what the cap is going to be not moving up, that impacts Jacob Markstrom's potential value as well. I think it just stays in that five, maybe higher five, closer to six range. And if that's the case, like, that's value for the Canucks. It's not over expensive, and it doesn't pass the threshold of how much you should be spending in net in general. And it gives you the option of cashing in an asset in Thatcher Demko down the road and, it, you know, solving the problem before it gets to the Seattle draft.
Well, and this is also a hockey team, and, you know, Bailey brings this up, that relies so much on its goaltending that, you know, it could be very detrimental for the Canucks to not have consistent, solid starting goaltending over the next couple of seasons. This is a young team that's still growing. You know, I've talked about it a lot, and we know it. You know, everybody that's watched the games this year knows it. They've relied on Jacob Markstrom too much. So unless you have a bona fide option to turn to other than Jacob Markstrom, it doesn't make sense to me to, you know, to turn the reins over to Demko yet. Because as much as, you know, he's a good young goaltender, he's growing. I think we saw from some of the growing pains that he had when he had to take over the crease after Markstrom was injured that he's probably not ready for that full-time workload yet. And then if you're saying after that, okay, you want to move away from Markstrom, and you're looking at the free agent class for goaltenders, like, I would argue that Jacob Markstrom is the best goaltender available in the free agent class. Robin Lehner is out there too, but he's 29 right now. He's only a year younger than Jacob Markstrom. Other than that, you're looking at a 39-year-old Craig Anderson, at a 36-year-old Jimmy Howard, at a 35-year-old Corey Crawford, and a 31-year-old Braden Holtby, who you know, I think many would argue, and probably rightfully so, that Braden Holtby would be an upgrade on Jacob Markstrom, but he's also older. So that plays into Chris's side of the argument that, you know, once goaltenders get into their 30s, you can see their game start to decline. For me, I'm more personally, you know, I feel more closer to the way Bailey argued it, that he's coming into his prime. And sure, if he's getting, you know, up to 34, 35, the last couple of years of a long-term contract, he's probably going to see some, you know, some decrease or his game dip a little bit. But that said, you know, I think it's still worth it to extend him to a contract like that, assuming that it's not like Bobrovsky money and absolutely crazy. You extend him to a contract like that, he's your starter with a bullet for the first two or three seasons at the very least. You probably have to move away from Demko in that scenario. And then in those final 2 years is when you look at a transition plan. And even though Jacob Markstrom would be making a lot of money, that would be where you have a goaltender on his entry-level contract coming in to support him. And by the end of it, you would hope that it would be like a tandem situation, or your younger goaltender, whether that's Mikey DiPietro, someone else they draft before then, someone else they're able to acquire. You would then hope that at the end of 5 years, when Jacob Markstrom is 35, that he could then hand the reins off to whoever could be the next starting goaltender for the Canucks.
It's all up to you at Sportsnet650. Cast your vote on Twitter. The poll is there right now. Social Distance Central, Bick Nizar, Brendan Batchelor. We'll talk to John LeClair coming up in minutes here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Social Distance Central, Vic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Just did Game of Takes. You can jump online and cast your vote for this week's competitor, Bailey Broadbent at Bailey Broadcast, or Chris Keene at Chris K Films. Batch, the defeated ones do not mean that they are gone forever. Joey in Richmond chiming in. Who was last week's competitor, losing to Chris. If I got scored last week for saying I think Chris was way too non-committal here, couldn't even really pin on exactly what his point was. Bailey strong. My vote is clear. That's from last week's loser.
Runner-up. Loser, yeah.
I'm going to be harsher. Joey and Richard chiming in onto the Subway text or the text line. You can cast your vote as well at Sportsnet 650 or 650-650. Really interesting to see how that goes.
And also, let us know your thoughts, right? Like, you
for sure.
Reply to the tweet. Let us know who you voted for, why you voted for them, whether you think the Canucks need to retain Markstrom at all costs, whether you think that there's a limit to that, as Chris argued, that depending on the scenario, it may make sense to move away from him. And let us know on the text line as well, 650-650. Who had the better argument? Who do you want to see back on the show with us tomorrow as this week's winner, who will either ascend to the composite throne in the case of Bailey, or retain his place there in the case of Chris?
And plus, we're always looking for take artists so we can recruit you for future takes, for future Game of Takes. So just share your thoughts, 650-650, of course, at Sportsnet 650 and at Batch Hockey, at Bick650. But this is a lot of fun. I've already had plenty of people reach out, be like, hey man, I want in for next week. Of course, you know, unfortunately, we only choose one person a week, but keep sharing your takes. We always appreciate it. Excited as well to, as we move on here on Social Distance Central, talk with John LeClair in just a moment. Just, you know, what do you remember from his career, Batch? I just remember just being like one of the most formidable wingers and basically that prototype of what we're trying to talk about here moving forward.
Yeah, you know, he was a great power forward in his time. Obviously, you know, I remember how dominant He was playing alongside Eric Lindros on the Legion of Doom line with Michael Renberg as well, and how those guys complemented each other so well. And, you know, to look back at them and, you know, realize that they never really, other than, you know, a couple of years, obviously they probably, I guess what I'm trying to say is that they could have been a team that could have won the Stanley Cup. And there were a couple of years where they were really legitimate contenders going all the way to the final, even, one of those teams that, you look back on and you say, man, how did they not find a way to get it done?
Well, and that's why when you have these types of players like a LeClaire, like a Lindros, you have to just keep going for it. Like, you do not want to be reflecting on a 10-year period, because, you know, he was there for 10 years. And we look at it and says, yeah, one of the best teams that never won. And we look at it with the Canucks, too, that Sedin era. You never want to reflect back on an era and say, they were close, but never that close, right? And you know, when you've got elite players, you got to try to maximize as many opportunities for them to try to win. And the 16-year NHLer and future coach for the Three Ice Hockey joins us now, 16-year NHLer John LeClaire. John, thanks a lot for giving us some time today. Really excited to talk to you, and specifically about this new venture in three-on-three hockey that you're going into. It's the format that all the fans have adopted and by and large love, but now it's going to be a league. What interests you about getting involved in the coaching aspect of it?
Oh, I'm really excited to be a part of it. You know, I think, you know, when you're talking about the NHL right now, that when the teams end up in a tie and they play the 3-on-3, fans love it. It's, you know, wide open, fast-paced, skilled hockey, and it's been very exciting. I think there's going to be a big market for it, especially with the way we adapted the style. We're going to be touring to different cities in a tournament style each place we go to. I just think it's got all the recipe to be a huge success.
Playing 3-on-3 in your day was very much an anomaly. How would your game have translated to today's 3-on-3?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Today compared to when I played 3-on-3?
Yeah, like how would your game have translated into playing 3-on-3 the way it is today?
I think I would have liked it. I mean, I think, you know, you would have had a chance to obviously, you know, create some speed. One thing you never really get to get going a little bit in our day was somebody always had a stick on you, skiing a little bit on you and slowing you up. You know, when you did get a chance to go out there in practice, you guys played a lot of 3-on-3 just to kind of keep the skills sharp and keep the high intensity speed going. I always loved it. So, you know, if I had the chance today, I think, you know, it'd be something I would really thrive to be a part of.
John, did you ever have a teammate that, you know, you talk about that era that you played in and there was a lot more clutching and grabbing and holding and hooking. Did you have a teammate that you think could have ascended to even higher highs than they did had they played in an era like we see today where the game is, you know, there is emphasis on speed and there isn't that allowance for hooking and holding penalties?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, there's some guys that kind of were flashes that came through that were, you know, they were on the smaller side and could skate, but because of them, they couldn't fight through a check and do those kind of things. And, you know, in today's game, you know, that wouldn't have been an issue for them. And, you know, from being probably a third liner up and down for the minors, they would have probably been a, you know, top six forward. I'm trying to think, we had many guys that came through like that, you know, from the Phantoms and stuff. Melichuk played on with Eric and I for a little bit. The kid could skate like nobody, really high skilled. But, you know, back in that era, he had a little bit of trouble just kind of breaking through some of the D that would hold him up.
Former NHLer John LeClaire with us here on Sportsnet 650. Want to get your thoughts on the return to play format that the NHL is going to put into place here this year. Obviously, all sorts of extenuating circumstances with the COVID-19 pandemic. Your thoughts on what the NHL has drawn up, and you know, if you were a player right now, what would your level of concern be about returning to play games, A, in front of no fans, and then B, with the potential threat of contracting this disease as well?
Yeah. Well, I think the NHL has been really proactive and done a great job of doing everything they can to get the sport back and to at least finish some sort of a season. You got to commend Gary Bettman on that. I think he did a good job of looking at all the possibilities out there. I don't think anything that they came up with was going to satisfy everybody. So, what they came up with to me is probably the best scenario they could have. So as far as the play-in and then the Stanley Cup being series taking place the way it's going to, that will be fine in my mind. As a player coming back, I think anytime you have a chance to go and win a Stanley Cup, you got to take advantage of it. And there's certain sacrifices you've made your whole career, and this is just going to be another one of them.
Yeah, from a player's mindset, John, I'm just kind of curious, do you try to reduce the amount of thought that goes into it? And you just say, okay, I'm in the playoffs, we're going for the Stanley Cup, I don't really care what the format is, so long as I get my opportunity to try to go for it.
To me, it would be, you just block it out. Like, who we're playing them tonight, or we're in this series against St. Louis or Vancouver or Minnesota, I mean, whoever it is, and away you go. And you just, that's what you attack at the time. And, I think with all the uncertainty that's going on, these guys now can focus, especially these teams that are, they have those play-in series of five ins. I mean, I'm sure they're doing nothing but focusing on, the defense they're going to be matched up against, or what line they're matching up, or what goalie they're shooting on. I mean, they've been thinking about that now since it came out, and that will be their thought process until they hit the ice.
John LeClair with us here on Sportsnet 650. And we wanted to get you on, John, to talk about the traits and the qualities that it takes to be a top level power forward in the National Hockey League, which of course you were for many years. When you think of what allowed you to have success playing the style that you played, and if you see other players either in the past or in present day that have been able to have success by being power forwards, what are some of the traits or qualities you think that you had and that other players need to have to play that type of game?
Well, I think, it's a mindset a little bit. So the power forward, back in our day wasn't as the creative centerman that was dangling pucks through the legs. They were the ones kind of pushing the D back and creating room for other guys by going hard to the net, crashing the boards a little bit in the corners, turning pucks over on the forecheck. That's how I envisioned my game and what was expected of me. Today, things are a little different. Back then, the power forward, you had to carry a guy on your back a little bit. You had to fight through a defenseman holding you up and those things. Where today, there's just a little bit more freewheeling to get to where you need to get to.
When you talk about, creating room and playing with a guy on your back, like how much of that is just having a consideration of your leverage in relation to players, right? Are you focused on that? Just how I can position my body so a guy can't get around to me or get around you to, affect you with the puck?
For me, that was everything, was the leverage and the body position and everything. Especially when I was in front of the net, to me, it was all about body position. As long as my stick was open, I didn't care. Like the defenseman, thought he had me covered by cross-checking me in the back, or he thought he could try to push me one way. As long as my stick was open, I knew that I could get a tip or a rebound, so he could do that. And as long as you had, like you said, position or you had some strength, then he couldn't move you as well, and you could deal with that fight while watching the play and watching the puck.
At what point in your career did you either recognize that that was going to be a style of game that would suit you, or just sort of lean into the fact that that was something you were going to be able to do well? Was it, on your way up through minor hockey, or when you were playing at the University of Vermont, or how did your game develop and grow to the point that it reached once you were in the NHL?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing came was when Jacques Demers took over in Montreal the year we won the Cup. Jacques was pretty honest with me, and he had a good relationship with all the players, and he was easy to talk to. And, I had several conversations with Jacques, and Jacques just kept saying, I see you as a Kevin Stevens-type power forward. I need you to do more of this, more driving the net with the puck. Take that defenseman on your back and try to get to the front of the net. Just really kind of point me in the right direction of how my style of game should be played. it didn't happen overnight. It took me a little bit to get the hang of it. But, you know, I think it started then. And then when I had a chance to come to Philly, it really, with all the playing with Eric and Michael, with those two guys' style, it made it easier for me to develop into that style and to get better at it.
Talking to 16-year NHLer John LeClair here on Social Distance Central, Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. John, you know, you talk about combining forces with those two other players. Stylistically, as a power forward, was Eric's style of game like the perfect center you kind of needed, or was he just so special that it was easy to play off of him? If you were trying to create a center to play with power forwards, what would you look for?
For me, everybody's different. You know, you look at some guys, they like the creative guy. I mean, like Anili liked having, you know, having Craig Janney and guys like that that were creative and, you know, really good with the puck and those kind of guys. To me, having Eric as a power guy and crashing guys and doing that, it made it easier for me to read off. It's just, I think it's, you know, what kind of player you are and how you read off different people. You know, I played with other centers, obviously, and playing with a guy like JR or somebody that's creative like that, it takes a little bit longer for me to kind of get the feel of what they're going to do with the puck. And, you know, they might want to hang on to it a little bit longer than, say, Eric wants to, you know, do a lot of give and goes and just go straight ahead instead of going side to side with the puck.
And, you know, in terms of talking about that line, you know, Eric was a bigger body that could play physically. And, you know, as you already talked about, use body position, you were as well. What were some of the conversations that you guys had at the time in terms of, like, I'm sure you would have had your set forechecks and understood, you know, F1, F2 and things like that. But, you know, did you guys have to talk to make sure that, for lack of a better term, you didn't get in each other's way out there at times?
No, I knew where Eric was too on the ice. I didn't want to run into that guy, even as a teammate, he hurt you. But, you know, that stuff wasn't, like, I think that was part of the chemistry that the three of us had, that we didn't have to do a lot of that. I think we kind of fed off each other's games really well, and I think we kind of had that chemistry where we knew, like, guys were going to go here and going to be kind of in that position at times. You know, I think that was one of the things that really made our line what it was.
That style of game, right? It's so physical. You're up against great defenders all the time, and it's so combative. Who's the guy? I don't want to say that, like, you had your best games against. Not something that you necessarily dominated, but who brought the best out of you when you had to play against them?
I don't know if it brought the best out of us, but I mean, there were some battles that we had. I mean, you know, we had to play against Jersey quite a bit, and they had a, you know, pretty good set of D there. You know, you're playing against some of these guys, and we played Detroit in the finals, playing against like Lindstrom and Murphy, those guys, not so much physically, but sticks and their body positioning, passing lanes made it difficult. So those were kind of some of the things that we had to overcome. Not always do we achieve it, but those were some pretty tough nights.
And when you look at, you know, we've already talked about what made a good power forward and, you know, what allowed you to have success and the strengths of your game. When you look at the modern NHL, and, you know, we already talked about it, speed is so much more emphasized. And in many ways, the physicality isn't there to the same degree that it was when you were playing. Who's the best example of a modern power forward in the NHL right now who can still play that kind of game and succeed in, you know, creating space for themselves around the net and getting tips and things like that, but, you know, has also been able to adapt their game or grow their game to a point where, you know, the way the game is played right now in the NHL suits them?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, a kid that comes to mind right away is Matthew Tkachuk. Plays pretty physical. You know, kind of wants to turn pucks over first and then kind of go to the net. Highly skilled. I'm sure there's others. You know, Brad Marchand's not a big guy, but I think he plays like a power forward. Or like he drives the net pretty well. Likes to take the puck to the net and looks to turn pucks overs like that. You know, those are the guys. it's tough to say when everybody thinks of their power forwards now, you're still thinking in your mind it's that 6'2", 225 guy. And today, you know, the way these guys skate, it's more the style than it is the size.
John, we'll get you out on this. You spent your last 2 years in Pittsburgh, and one of your teammates is one of our colleagues. I think he's going to join us here tomorrow, the day after. Colby Armstrong. Do you have any Colby Armstrong stories?
Colby was a good teammate in Pittsburgh. He really was. Him and Sid, they hooked up pretty well and had some real good success. But Colby was a kid that I really enjoyed hanging out with off the ice. Real good personality, always smiling, laughing. Just a lot of fun to be around. And, you know, he's doing really well with the broadcast stuff. He's entertaining, sees the game really well, and explains it very well.
16-year NHLer and future coach of the Three Ice Hockey League, a 3-on-3 league that is starting up very shortly. John, thanks a lot for giving some time today, and hope you're safe and keeping well with all that's going on in the world right now.
Absolutely. Same to you guys, too. Take care.
Thanks, John.
It's John LeClair. Tremendous chat talking about, the way power forwards view the game and what's important to him, and a lot that you can take away from there that is very much still transferable into today's game batch.
Absolutely. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that he talked about how, especially with that Legion of Doom line, they like to play sort of north-south with straight-ahead speed, which is something that we see in the NHL a lot today. Now, he's right, you know, in the sense that you look at both him and Eric Lindros, they were both big, strong guys. 6'3 for LeClaire and 225, and Lindros was 6'4 and 230. Whether having that sort of build would lead to as much success in today's era, not to take anything away from those guys because they were great players, and I'm sure had they come up in this era, they would have still been great players. But, you know, is that the build? Is that the kind of player that has that level of success today in the NHL? Or, you know, even though a guy might be bigger, is he just, you know, a little bit lighter than that so that he's able to bring his speed as much as possible?
If you enjoyed that, our player trait conversations, many more on the way here on Social Distance Central. But that's it for another day. Game It Takes is live, folks. Go online at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. Cast your vote for our champion, Chris K, at Chris K Films, or for at Bailey Broadcast. Their takes are all also online, so you can listen to them if you haven't heard them, and cast your vote. Who will sit atop the composite throne? That's we'll determine that tomorrow. Plenty more between now and then, including Reach Deep, which is seconds away, with Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Mike Keenan will be joining them. We're talking about the Iron Throne. What about Iron Mike as they continue the Stanley Cup conversations coming up on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.